I don't have much voice, so you're going to have to meet me halfway. This means we're coming back together. Don't be shut up. Good morning, hello. So for the sake of the taping, I am now starting officially. I'm Eunice Scarfe. I'm from Edmonton, Alberta. I grew up in Seattle, Washington. I came to fiction and writing rather late, well, I considered it late at the time, mid-30s, and went and took a degree and did a creative writing master's degree and did my thesis in a collection of short stories that were linked, so the characters were the same and the location was the same. They were written individually as independent stories. That was called Simsar. I've been working on fiction and nonfiction ever since. I'm inviting you to write into memoir. Yeah, memory. To write into memory everything we do today. First draft, which means it can be filled with mistakes, can be filled with transitions that you didn't expect and go where you didn't expect to go. This is the virtue of first draft, to just dive in and see where you are taking. Good morning. So we will begin. First of all, what do you read? Let's do a few questions. What do you read? What are you reading, or have you just finished? Somebody just asked me, what memoir would you recommend? Let's just warm up relative to our life with words. What do you read? Here.
Middle Passage by Charles Johnson.
Middle Passage by Charles Johnson. Another one? Thank you.
Da Vinci Code.
The Da Vinci Code. How many of you read that? Okay. Thank you. Another one.
Memoirs of a Geisha.
Memoirs of a Geisha. Is there another one on that list? It sounded like you were moving towards another one.
Oh, I was just going to say historic fiction. I love historic fiction.
Red Tent. Historic fiction. Red Tent takes us into the Old Testament.
Devil in the White City.
Devil in the White City.
Man mistook his wife for
one here and then one over here.
I just finished Kite Runner.
Kite Runner is set in Kabul. One of the few that takes us into Afghanistan contemporary. Yes.
The man who mistook his wife for a hat.
The man who mistook his wife for a hat, Oliver Sacks, writing out of his vast experience in his medical practice.
End of the spear.
End of the spear. End of the spear. End of the spear. All right, good morning, good morning. You're all welcome. So that was just by way of warm-up, because what you're reading is of interest. Usually writers read, but today it's about what you are going to write. It's you producing the text. And usually about the end of class, I remember to remind you that you shouldn't stay if you're not willing to be sort of absolutely consumed by a story that's going to make you quit your job and leave home and go to the hibernation. So I'm warning you now, if you're worried about this, go now. I started writing for exactly 1 year. I was going to do it for 1 year and then go back to my job. And that was 20 years later, I still haven't gone back to that job. So I warn you, you have been warned that if you enter into story, it can sometimes become a very demanding, delightful, engaging, and lifelong taskmaster. So are you ready? Mm-hmm. I want you to write down the date, which is July 17th. When you write, please always know when you've written, what you've written. We're listening to three of these. I don't know which order I'm going to read them. Peggy Both is a former Mennonite. And Church of My Childhood is one she wrote in a class. She now lives in Alberta. So Mennonite origin. Alice Hostetter, you know, I didn't realize this when I put these up, is also a Mennonite in origin. I did not do that deliberately. But I will now make a comment on this now that I've realized it. And that is the Mennonite tradition is blossoming and flourishing in writing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but particularly in Canada, the novels, the poems, the fiction, the short stories, they are coming out prolifically. And I'm just hoping the Lutherans can catch up. You're not Lutheran, you don't have to. So we're going to wait a minute, just 1 minute. Since we've got more, you can introduce yourself again to your neighbor. This time it's on the church of your childhood. Just tell your neighbor, what was the church of your childhood in terms of denomination or origin? And then we'll start. Just 1 minute. And I'm going to Disputes, where do we begin? Thank you, thank you. How many of you discovered that you are sitting next to someone from the Protestant persuasion? You'll get to say more as we begin to write. Are you ready? We're going to do On Foot Washing Sunday first. That's Alice Hostetter. And this is a short piece of prose, and if you would just relax and listen, roll your shoulders, because that's what's going to be working in a minute, to push your pen. When I was 13, my parents were called, they said, to go to Meadville Mission. It was off in the mountains, a small gray shingled church on a treeless hilltop. It was an hour's drive from home, past carefully painted barns and fertile fields and pastures, and then up the mountain and past fallen down shacks and yards littered with discarded appliances and car parts. My parents were called, they said, to bring Jesus to these people, to show them his love, and we, their children, went along, Sunday after Sunday, to worship with people who in every other area of our lives we avoided. Every 3 months on the Sunday after communion, we had foot washing. I dreaded foot washing Sunday. How many of you ever participated in foot washing? Okay. This is probably written in for the late 40s and 50s, early 50s, and it's in the deep south here. As always, the women sat on one side, the men on the other. On foot washing Sunday, I tried to choose my seat carefully, trying to avoid the feet I did not want to wash. But there was no predicting who the bishop's wife might pair me with as she went down the rows of women, quietly directing who should go next into the back room where coats were hung, where two white basins sat on the floor in front of a wooden bench, a stack of white towels in the corner. When I was 13, the feet I most wanted to avoid were Sarah Montgomery's, and it seemed I was paired with her almost every time, as if God was giving me some special challenge. Will you notice that when I was 13 is repeated, and you can put that down if you like, as an entry point, when I was, but you may change the age to what you mean. But you know, this is how we use a text, is that we borrow the entry point. And it will work for all of you, when I was, and your subject might be different than this one. We're talking in general about the church of our childhood. Sarah was an older, almost blind woman who smelled of coal oil and too few baths. At the direction of the bishop's wife, she shuffled into the back room, and the bishop's wife signaled for me to follow. Feeling for the end of the bench, Sarah sat down on the bench and with shaking hands unlaced her shoes, peeled down her stockings. I knelt down and slid the basin under her feet. I tried not to look at the bunions, the calluses, the black toenails. Taking one foot at a time, I splashed the water over and around, being careful not to touch her. I picked up a towel and dried her feet quickly, not carefully, as the bishop's wife had done the time she washed my feet. She had wrapped the towel around, caressing my foot, drying each toe around and between. When I finished, when I was 13, I said, God bless you, Sarah, as we were supposed to, but I did not embrace her. Because Sarah could not bend down to wash my feet, I didn't take off my shoes and stockings, but hurried back to where I had been sitting, leaving Sarah to struggle to put on stockings over still damp feet, to pull herself up and feel her way back to the bench. I might have tried to soothe Sarah's feet, to help her with her stockings. I might have helped her up and led her to her seat. I might have said, God bless you, sister, and meant it, but I didn't. And that's the end of the piece. How many of you, when you heard, to worship with people who in every other area of our lives we avoided, had some shock of recognition of what she was talking about? The gap between what we are, we're mandated to do, love and neighbor, and the form and shape of how and when we choose, I'm just going to leave that. I don't want to discuss her piece, I want to invite you into your piece. Are you with me? We're not discussing the gap between you two rights. The failure to love it wholeheartedly. This is a 13-year-old girl, and paired up every time they went with Sarah. Take a deep breath, then you take the story in, and you let it out. Now, if this brings you to a story you want to start, start writing. But I have two other small ones to read, both of which take us back to childhood. Any questions on this one? Then, will you come with me to Texas? Oh, there's a smile there.
Yes.
This is Peggy Voth. The third one. And the church of my childhood was small, but the experience was huge. The building itself sat on a corner lot, unpretentious, with no spire, no stained glass, just a rectangle of white stucco so brilliant in the Texas sun that the men pulled their hats down to shade their eyes as they approached the door. Women looked like they were saluting, their hands rigid across their foreheads to cast shadows from the eyebrows down. We children merely screwed our eyes into tight squints. There were few of us. Brother and sister Brown, he with a stooped walk and she with hair so thin that I could see her scalp. Their daughter, Sister Glisson, and her husband, Brother Glisson, who always drove the latest Ford model and wore expensive clothes. Their teenage daughter, Linda, with a slight build and a breathy voice, and a face so beautiful that I had a hard time not staring at her. The Sadler family, poor Mrs. Oswald, a widow who trailed sachet. All few of us clustered up front, filling the first three pews in order to keep from feeling like we were rattling around in too much space. The constant polishing of the wood pews kept them slick. There's more there, but that's as far as I want to go. The church of my childhood was. Yours might not be small. The church of my childhood, however, could be a beginning. The church of my childhood was on the corner. The church of my childhood was my second home. The church of my childhood was the only church in town. The church of my childhood is the start. The church of my childhood you can start with. And you don't have to start with that. That's an invitation. You can start with I remember. You can start with anything you like. You can start with a question. Hands if you have a church in your childhood. Okay. We're all right then, aren't we? Isn't it nice when you write from memory? You don't have to make it up. You do fiction. You have to invent. Well, you draw on memory. I'm asking you to go to your memory and tell us what it's like so we know. Now, back to the first one, foot washing. There are people who don't know about foot washing, who've never taken part, who don't understand the origin or the tradition or the function or the purpose. Can you put that on your page? Yes. See, we're not discussing it. You're putting what you know of it on the page in your piece. This is why we do it. Now, there's one more. I'm going to leave number two. There's one more, however. This comes from Emily Carr, and it's six words. And that's your third invitation. We'll read this, and that'll be the last one. Oh, I suppose I'll read number two as well. Just too close to the subject. But I want to give you this one for sure. Emily Carr is a painter in Victoria, was a painter in Victoria, B.C., famous Canadian painter, though poor as church mice, when she was painting. She died in about 1949. I invite you to look her up on the web. The first lines of her memoir are the following. All our Sundays were exactly alike. And I'd suggest you put that down, since if you don't want to write it now, you might want to write it later or make a group to write. All our Sundays were exactly alike. Now, of course, you can reverse this to none of our Sundays were ever alike. But it is an opening which you can borrow. And at the end of your piece, you'll say, after hearing Emily Carr. You know, you don't have to say, Emily Carr said all our Sundays were exactly alike. You can just use the phrase and start into your piece. Oh, we'll do number two tomorrow. It's time to write. Who needs paper? There's some pads here. Okay, there's some pads here. You might have to put these together. You can share with one, and you can share with one and pick up some pages. Okay, so write as fast as you can. Don't try to be orderly and tidy and essay-like. Go with what image suggests the next image, which suggests the next image. Go where it goes. You won't know where you're going to end up. You open yourself up to association of memory and move with the memory. A good mess is the best you can do. It's the highest thing you can accomplish here for it. Yeah, this mess. Okay, so we'll take at least about 12 to 15 minutes. And if you prefer to sit out in the sun, feel free, I'll call you out there. If you'd like to sit right here, I think energy moves when we start working and you draw on the energy that everyone else is working on in their memory. Feel free, stay here, go. It'll be about 12 minutes. Any questions? There is no assignment. I'm asking you to go back to the church of your childhood. Yeah, that's it. Come back.
Thank you. I
In about another minute, I'm going to ask you to draw a line, so you have a minute to get to the end of your thought or sentence or line. And then I ask you to draw a line. One more minute.
Hello.
Draw the line. And write below the line, what was that like to write? What were my feelings as I was writing? What were my thoughts as I was writing, or memories that didn't get down? And you might want to make a note of those. Or you might say, I thought I was going to get to confirmation, never got there. This is where me, myself, and I, the committee of three that make the writing work, just have a comment to yourself. You also put well down and write your name. Well done. And write your name. I'll say that again. You put well done and write your name. The writer needs to be her own cheerleader or his own cheerleader. I once said put well done Eunice, and then everybody put well done Eunice. You understand? Well done and put your name. Response to yourself is a note to yourself here. And because you've been interrupted, it's always a place to say, when I get back to some silence, I will continue and do da-da-da. Doesn't matter whether you like him or her. Any neighbor will do. By this I mean to say, you don't have to have your best friend talking about your writing. Sorry, I'm not trying to be facetious. Okay, I was trying to be facetious. Either neighbor will do. Please tell somebody on your right or your left what you wrote about. You have 30 seconds each.
I'm
Thank you. So you said what you wrote about each and then the next thing we do, and I call this a ritual of writing that you can take home, and I make the steps very clear. You can take home and make a writing group. How many of you are in book groups? The next step's a writing group. I want you to take your paper, and I'm going to give us 30 seconds, and we're all going to read simultaneously with feeling, with expression, so you can hear what you've just done. And you're paying attention to the shape and the sound of your own work. This is literally for you to hear with your own ears. It's called writing aloud. I call this writing aloud, A-L-O-U-D. So right away, you hear the shape that you've given. When you're writing, you have 1,000, maybe 900 words that are all saying, choose me, as you write. And that, I think, is why when you finish writing something, it feels a little bit scattered. You weren't quite sure whether this has any shape or form. I want you to hear it. And because we're a large class, this is one way to hear it simultaneously. It is the ear to hear what you've written.
When this is recorded afterwards, could I buy the tape and listen to us all read it?
Yes. All right, if you pick up your pen, and if by any chance you wrote just a little and get done, start over, so that we all have a voice contributing to the sound. But this is a genuine function for you to hear the shape of your text immediately. All right, are you ready?
So we're writing?
You're reading what you wrote aloud. As if all of us were listening, but none of us are. How many of you have done this before with me? Yes, well, that's what we're doing. Okay, take your paper, read aloud. Nobody will hear you, so give it expression, give it feel. Ready? When our
today.
I'm constantly working against this number of people in this amount of room. So you, normally when I do this, we would write.
I'm not critical about this. I'm just, for myself,
yeah.
I wouldn't go.
No, I don't like producing that frustration in the system we use. So if you do this at home, have everybody read and start over again, because some will stop sooner, and read long enough. That's only 30 seconds. So you can see how far you went. It takes longer to write what it then takes to hear. That's no brainer. Okay, anyone else?
Oh, tone was so fantastic. And nobody seemed to, you didn't hear one tone standing out. Oh, we all were in this.
I didn't hear any of you.
It was just amazingly.
You don't often have this many when you do this. Any other experiences?
I like it because that's one reason I went outside, because I kind of needed to say things out loud even when I'm writing, right? And I feel like I'm thinking out loud or something.
Okay, anyone else?
It reminded me of a Pentecost. Actually, it reminded me of the dinner table at home.
Felt experience as you
listened. What was nice to have to be able to talk when everybody else was talking.
Okay, given the numbers that we are, it is a din. But the point I want to make is that as soon as possible, after you finish writing whatever you write, read it aloud on your own. You don't have to, the function isn't to get inside a group. We do that here because we're all together. Go to the bathroom, turn on the shower, go in your car, sit, oh wait, no, that's when you tape it. That's another project altogether. Hear what you've written. I work with writers who are aiming to produce text for publication, and the emphasis on this is to cut the time that it takes you to revise something, because your ear will tell you what to do in the way that your eye and your mind might not. All right? Your ear can hear the shape to it, and the more you do it, the more you'll hear the shape that suits the subject of your text. It's all about you. So it's your ear informing your text. All right. We'll do this again. Every time we write together, we'll read aloud in order to remind us. Read aloud right away. How many of you felt when you finished this was no good? Well, that's great. Oh, okay. One of the things I want also in your hearing your words is that you hear that it has much more shape than you thought it did. And I can't prove that to you. I can only invite you to experience it, that it has... The shape is found by hearing it.
I found by hearing it, it was worse than what it sounded like.
Okay, this is 50-50. It'll either be better or it'll be worse.
Well, I found there was more repetition than I really wanted.
Okay, so you heard the repetition, and then that might be something you take out.
Okay.
All right, thank you. That'll happen. All right, now what I'd like to do is invite you to read to the group. So take your text, and if you want to read one by one, all at once. And because of the number that we are, I'm going to give the same amount of time to each person, and again, you're going to have the frustration of not finishing, but to hear a sample from each person's words. Or maybe I'll change my mind and you'll read the whole thing. Mostly, I would like to hear as many as we can now in the time remaining. Who would like to read? And I'll tell you, the one thing we do is not critique, is not give you advice, is not give you information. Oh, there's a book you should read after having heard. Oh, you should have left that man long ago. I know the divorce lawyer for you. We give no information, none whatsoever. Not even asking for more personal information. Because in a writing class, you have written something and it's sacrosanct. We don't enter into it with judgment, consolation, condemnation. Information, advice. Over a coffee table, we might. You tell me a story, I'll tell you a story. I'm afraid I don't have enough voice to finish, so I think I'm going to cut down what I'm going to say and let you read entirely for the rest. What's your name? Yes, let's have readings now. We're not giving any advice. The one thing we will do, I'll get to you, is please write down a quote from each person that you hear. One quote. It could be three words, it could be four words. Four words don't mind if you don't get the whole thing. Please. Please just do a quote. You'll find out what we do with that later. Okay, and the name. Emily, would you like to read at this point in time? Thank you. Would you like to stand? Not required.
When I was listening.
You'll have to do a bit louder, honey, because we've got to get over to that wall. Okay?
When I was 9, I got my very first picture Bible. At first, I thought that church was no big deal, but after reading about idols and God, I realized that you should thank God whenever possible. When we are His creation, and He loves each and every one of us equally. I realized that we were put on this earth to do great things. Every day we are blessed with the way of God, and He watches over His children. Now that I know about the love God gives to us and is a gift.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you for reading. What's below the line? What's below the line? Did you write something? What was this time to write?
When I wrote this, I felt loved by God.
Thank you, Emily. The word, those of you who took a quote down, would you give it back to her so she can hear her words given back behind her?
We were put on the earth to do great things.
Emily, they're going to be giving you words back that you just said, so you can hear your words come back to you. Okay, thank you for me. A couple others?
We are His creation.
We are His creation.
I thought church was no big deal.
I thought church was no big deal.
Whenever possible.
Whenever possible.
Every day we are blessed.
every day we are blessed.
Should thank God whenever possible.
We should thank God whenever possible. No more.
You should think a lot.
You should think a lot. How is it to hear it back in fragments like an echo? All your words.
It just feels good.
Thank you for reading, Emily. Who'd like to read next? Okay. Remind me.
Janet.
I was going to say Janet.
Oh, you're good.
I'm getting better. Janet, this is Janet, and you'll take the quote from Janet the same as we did for Emily, please. Deep breath, you breathe in Emily's story and breathe it out. Back to her, and now Janet's story.
The church of my childhood was a magical place. I was born in the San Joaquin Valley in California, where it was always hot and always dusty. My father was a Lutheran pastor who, in reality, was also the architect who designed a new church building. I know now that he spent morning after morning out in the vacant lot that would house this building, charting the course of the sun so that when the church was built and the windows were in, the red skylight in the ceiling would sprinkle the cross in front with red. At the time, I didn't understand it. I would sit in the cool pew, hearing the vibrato of the older ladies, who my siblings and I could imitate by quickly poking our throats while we sang Rock of Ages or My Faith Looks Up to Thee, and watch the light dancing. I didn't know about the orbit of the earth, the nature of light, or anything else, but to know that every Sunday, even on cloudy days, the white cross was spattered with red, blood red, the blood of Jesus Christ who died in blood for me.
Thank you, Janet. Below the line. What did you write?
This brought back the feelings, the cool of the building, the stained glass windows designed by a man named Brunstrom.
Thank you. Thank you for reading. What's your feeling hearing it?
It just brought back that feeling of being, you know, 4 years old and
lots of detail through the eyes of the child.
I was there every Sunday.
Imprinted. Okay, thank you for reading. Words for Janet. Same for the family. Emily?
It was a magical place. A
magical place, thank you.
Charting the course of the sun.
Charting the course of the sun.
I know now.
Watching the light dancing.
Watching the light dancing.
Yep. Even on cloudy days.
Even on cloudy days.
At the time, I didn't understand it.
At the time, I didn't understand it.
Sprinkle across with red.
Sprinkle across with red.
Mornings in the vacant lot.
Mornings in the vacant lot. Thank you, Jenna. All the words coming back to you. One more.
Sit in the cool pew.
Sit in the cool pew. All right, take a deep breath, and when you've got time, write another page. And that's next. Would I choose next? Is that you? Yes, thank you. Your name, please.
That's Michelle.
I'm okay. No, I'm not timing people. We're hearing everybody in the entire team. We'll hear as many as we can. Michelle?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
I'm not sure what to write about. I started off writing about my church, but I ended up making myself sound childish and immature. A big gust of wind brought sand and leaf-like things into my face anyway, so this made me forget about my church idea. So now I'm sitting here outside with my mom. The laughter of passing people echo behind me, and the buzzing bees and flies swerve past me. The sun is warm on my face, and the wind is refreshing. The snow dropped peaks of the neighboring mountains, and green pine trees provide an enchanting cape of beauty for the people at Holden. I wasn't sure what to write about, so I wrote about nature. And I find in all the writing that I do, I find it easier to write descriptively or actual stories. Writing non-fictionally makes me think harder.
Thank you, Michelle. What's below the line?
Oh, that was below the line.
That was below the line. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You know, by the time you get here, you're writers, not after. Like, by virtue of choosing to come, there is a relationship with writing or words that is either in place or wants to be in place. Or is waiting to be in place. And I hear it in all of your writings, if you've been writing every day, all day, for years and years and years. Thank you, Michelle, for bringing us right here. The wind is blowing and the dust is coming, and that's what happened out there. Words from Michelle.
Enchanting cape of beauty.
That's what I wrote. Enchanting cape of beauty. Okay. Another one.
Echoed behind me.
The
sun is warm on my face.
The sun is warm on my face. Thank you for reading. Thank you for writing. Who's next? Over here. Your name, please.
John.
John. The only reason I ask you to stand, you can sit, as long as you don't look into the thumbs that goes up. Please.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Just so the voice will go across the room. Thank you, John.
My grandfather came to live with us when I was 9, and he was 79. My first impression was of a tall, white-haired man whose suitcase was held together with twine. His back was very straight, while other old people who came into my life at that time were often bent and slow walking. He moved into our back bedroom. Our house was not elaborate. It was built in 1909 and showed all of its years. But Grandfather never complained. He seemed thankful for all that was given, although, as I later learned, at one time and several times in his life, he had garnered some wealth. But now it was the suitcase held by twine, a few brownish photos, an old pistol, and an assortment of clothes, mostly black, as were his high-top shoes. By the time I was 10, we had become fast friends. I liked the way he harbored the many varieties of fruits that our backyard held: winter apples, cherries, pears, peaches, filberts, walnuts. Some days I would see him pick up a peach or an apple and hold the naked fruit in his hand, a ripeness to catch the sun. I discovered he was a storyteller, sometimes confusing history with a multitude of his years. Flew the first time in 83, he said. I knew the Wright brothers first flew in 1903, but because I loved him, I felt a force of unknown muzzling. I kept still, a very difficult assignment for a boy of 10 who thought he knew more than he did. One day I asked him if his grandfather told him stories. Yes, he did. He was a great storyteller, he said. When was your grandfather born? I asked. I knew my grandfather was born in 1864. My grandfather was born in 1829. Not only that, but my great-grandfather told me stories too. When was he born? I asked. 1799, he said. Years later, I realized that I had talked to a man from the 18th century. When I was 15 in 1949, my grandfather died. I had never faced death before, nor had I ever been to a funeral. I didn't know what to expect, but I knew what I had to do and what my grandfather would most appreciate. Mother had expected that my sister and I would pay our last respects. Filing by his casket, I carefully put two apples in.
What's below the line?
I felt as good as doing a piece of carpentry.
Thank you, John. Thank you for taking us there. Words for John.
Naked fruit catching the sun.
Naked fruit catching the sun. And I will point so we don't hear them doubly. So if you've got one, tell me, let us know. Emily.
Shed all its years.
Shed all its years.
The suitcase held by twine. I was 9 and he was 79.
Kept still.
Kept still.
Hold the naked fruit in his hand.
Hold the naked fruit in his hand.
I had talked to a man from the 18th century.
Thank you. Can you give us a his multitude of years? A multitude of years. Thank you for reading. You've got a lot of detail about the grandfather.
I loved him.
That's at the next line. I loved him. Were you ready?
Okay.
Got words down. Who'd like to read next? Thank you for your words. Here we go. Yes.
I just want to say you made me cry. And now you laugh when you hear the line. One of my first memories of childhood are at home church chamber Lutheran was being brought by one of my parents to the nursery, or cry room, as it was sometimes called. I would have on a little black patent leather shoe and shoes and wonderful full dresses that my mom had made for me. I remember going in the room with little thumbelinas and baby cribs and soft blankets to play with and dolls whose eyes opened and closed depending on how you held upright or laid it flat. I remember clickety-clack tiny wooden chairs to sit in over by a little altar table with a picture of Jesus the Good Shepherd holding a sheep over his shoulders in a field of grazing sheep. I remember a plastic cake with a slit on the side and candles on the top. And when it was a child's birthday, we'd all sing happy birthday. And the second verse, God bless you today, God bless you today. And then the birthday child would put a penny in the slit of the cake for every year of the little life. And we'd all count together as we pushed the pennies into the cake.
What's the line that I have to
This was fun to write about. I'm glad I have this memory.
Thank you. Give us all your name, please. Your name.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sue.
Sue. And I didn't ask you that before. Sue and the plastic cake. And some of you smiled and laughed. And how many of you had the plastic cake?
Oh, plastic church.
Plastic church. I have to say, mythology in mind where we find a theme, so plastic church, and we all pray to it, and that's chapter one. Chapter two is the architect of your church and the design of it. And chapter three is, and we all have a little bit, and this is an anthology, look for it next week. Who's next to read? This is what we do all week. I will read different things every day, invite you to write, we'll hear from those who have written, and invite you to come. We'll, in the evening, we're going to read those who haven't heard. Hear those who haven't been heard. Would you like to reveal? Hugo. Your name, please, dear.
Marianne.
Marianne. Have you been here before, Marianne?
Yes, I have. Climbing these hills isn't what I'm used to. The church of my earliest childhood, a white wooden church with a steeple, was located on a corner of a small town in Iowa. My father had been sent there immediately after his ordination to start a mission congregation in a town where there already was a Lutheran church. The journey there was my first since I was a newborn. The following year, a sister was born on my first birthday. As we grew older, we learned to recognize the words on the white wooden sign in front of the church, which said, English Lutheran Church, you are always welcome. Whenever someone would ask us about what church we went to, after asking if we were twins and receiving our unison responses, we're twins a year apart, our response, also in unison, was, English Lutheran Church, you are always welcome. I believe those words shaped much of my life, since our church was a sanctuary for people of all races, social, economic status, ages. My father set up daily vacation Bible school at four area churches where, again, all races and social statuses existed, and we girls were taken along to take part. That church became the ideal, in my sense, of what a church should be. Fortunately, I married a man with the same expectations of what a church should be. I remember the sadness of my mother after my father's death and only 8 years of marriage when she heard about the following pastor's wife chasing a man from the back pew of the church who was sleeping off a night on the town and telling him that his kind was not wanted there.
Take a deep breath, Marianne. Okay. Did you hear that last, the preacher's wife, after my mother, told the man sleeping on the pew you were not wanted here? Thank you for reading. What's below the line?
Continue to write about later churches and my present thoughts about our church.
You can do all the churches, the church of your childhood, and then the next, and the next, and the next. And that's the model that was in God, number two, and we'll probably hear that one tomorrow, how you can move through your life with one subject, and it could be the church, the next church, the next church, and the next church. And then it sets up a red thread through your life. Words for Marianne, please. Thank you for reading. Emily, and then behind you.
Came ideal.
Pardon?
Came ideal.
Came ideal. Another one? Yes.
I'm being a twin. I'm just... Twins a year apart.
Twins a year apart.
The journey was my first.
The journey was my first, being a newborn, I think. Yes.
Two short ones. You're always welcome, and his kind was not wanted here.
His kind was not wanted here. You are always welcome. Okay.
We didn't hear Sue's, our comments back to Sue.
Oh, we didn't. Thank you for helping me. I counted on that.
The Thumbelina was right in there.
Yeah. I counted on that. Okay, Maria, thank you for reading. And Sue, do you have them written down? Like, this is really an assignment. You don't have a quiz, but you do have to write one quote from everybody. Just one, and then you put your pen down. So what ones did you have for Sue?
Plastic cake.
Plastic cake.
Clickety-clack wood chair.
Clickety-clack wood chair.
Dolls whose eyes open and closed, depend on how you held them.
And then she did the other thing. Thank you, Sue, for reading. All right, where have we been taken? To many, many, many different locations, and there's more of you we haven't heard from than we have. We stop on time, but I'm willing to stay and hear another round from you. You two are going today, so you have to stay and lead first. Who else is going today?
What?
I haven't given an order for a week, but now it's time. Anybody else leaving today? All right, there's a second, so we should stop 5 minutes. And anybody else who'd like to stop, I'll hear about six more, and then I'm going to lunch at noon, but we're closing now. Second thing is, I come here immediately after Vespers and sit down and start listening. And tonight there's a forum at 8:45, and you can leave for the forum. All right? So my hope for you, I don't like teaching this writing, teaching writing, unless I know that those who have written are heard by someone before the end of the day. So you can pick your listener, or you can call home. Unfortunately, this one doesn't work here. Call home and leave it on the answering machine, so that at home you can hear your voice. But you get it aloud with a listener before the end of the day. So you have two choices. You have two options to choose from. Now I'll stay and listen. And right after Vespers, if you'd like to bring the paper over. We did this last week. We just read, give a quote, read, give a quote, read, give a quote, quote, and go for ice cream. So please look at your neighbor and say good morning or whatever. Eye contact with your neighbor, because when you go deep within, you want to come back. Let's see, what question should you ask your neighbor? I know, your favorite toothpaste. That'll bring you back to this world. Your favorite toothpaste, please tell your neighbor, and then go, and if you want to stay, we'll listen.